This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
1, 2, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, rock. 5, 6, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, rock. 9, 10, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, rock. We're gonna rock around the clock tonight. Put your glad rags on. Join me, hon. We'll have some fun.
Oh, yeah, Little Bill Haley of the Comets. Thank you, Ed. That'll wake us up, won't it? Good morning. Welcome to Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show, Tampa Bay's libertarian radio voice. I am Paul Molloy, and along with Big Ed Davis, thanks for joining us. Boy, the month is flying by. Monday, October 23rd. By the way, we're here Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time. We sure appreciate if you'd join us. In a few minutes, Mark Scribner, he of the Competitive Enterprise Institute, will join us. We're going to talk about whether or not to privatize the air traffic control system in America. So stay tuned for that. And should millionaires stay at the same high tax rate while everybody else gets their taxes cut? What do you think? We're going to discuss it. And Jimmy Carter, President Jimmy Carter, says that the media is way too tough on Donald Trump. We're going to talk about that as well. And in our ultimate top 10, for those of you that fly, brand new, hot off the press, top 10 best airports for passengers in North America. You will want to know. By the way, Freedom Works, we're sponsored in part by Andrew's Master Barbershop, which is located in the Overcash Plaza on State Road 580 and Overcash Drive in Dunedin. They're open Tuesday through Friday, 8:30 to 5, and Saturday, 8:30 to 2 p.m. They're the best haircut place in Tampa Bay. You can take my word for it. Okay, lots to do today. Lots to do. In the meantime, we're talking a little bit about taxes, as we always do. And the Ways and Means Committee in the House and the Republicans on that committee are engaged in a rewrite and a discussion of how to set up the new tax system. Now, what the idea is, they keep talking about taxes for the middle class. You always hear that, the middle class. How about we drop the taxes for everybody, top to bottom? No, they don't want to say that they'll also drop taxes on the rich, because the rich have become somebody that you're allowed to throw darts at and demonize. Right now, the marginal tax rate for anybody who makes $418,000 or more per year is just under 40%. It's 39.6%. 40% of their money is taken away in taxes. That's federal taxes. Does not include all the other taxes that the guy might run into. The Republicans' opening gambit, apparently it's been worked on for quite a while and endorsed by Trump, cuts the highest tax rate to 35%. So that's 4.6% lower. But now the House Republicans have changed their thinking. Under their current thinking, apparently, people who make that $418,000 and more will be in a lower tax bracket up till $1 million. They'll be in a lower tax bracket. But all the millionaires, anybody that makes $1 million and more, they're going to keep their tax rate, 39.6. They get it. In other words, the more successful you are, the more you're going to be penalized in this country. See, that's the way a socialist thinks. You do well, then you'll have more of a penalty because we want to bring you down to the same level as everybody else. You should not do better than other people in the socialist view. That's not right. Why should you get more than the other guy just because you work harder? Now, that's the socialist view. That's what we're doing here. In other words, Democrats are pushing to continue to penalize those that do really well. Here's what Grover Norquist, if you've ever heard of him, I like him. He goes on television from time to time. And he was a guy in the Ronald Reagan administration. I forget what he was exactly. But he was a spokesman for their tax ideas. He said, when it comes to the House Republicans, I understand compromise. But why compromise with the sin of envy? This isn't the dumbest idea I've ever heard of, but it's in the top 20. So he says, why wouldn't you allow everybody to get a tax break? I mean, here on our show, we would like a flat tax, which was something that a lot of people, especially conservatives and libertarians to some extent, have been pushing for a long time. Steve Forbes, guy that runs Forbes magazine, ran for president, talked about the flat tax. Everybody gets taxed at the same rate. So instead of having the rich get taxed more and the lower incomes get taxed less, everybody paid about 17% approximately, with the first $20,000 for single people and $40,000 or so for married with family not being taxed at all. And it was a flat tax, and there were no, you know, other deductions. So you really could do your taxes on a one-sided piece of paper and send it in. It was easy to do. But see, we don't do that anymore. Why? Well, because we provide accountants and lobbyists and all kinds of others, attorneys, all kinds of work when we complicate the tax system, right? If you could do your own taxes, would you pay somebody else to do them? No, you wouldn't. I put a lot of accountants out of business, especially ones that work from their homes, right? So, of course, they'd find other things to do. There's plenty of work to do anyway. But why simplify something with a flat tax? I've never heard a good argument against a flat tax. I have never heard one. And, you know, the less you send to Washington, the more you keep. The more you spend on other things, the more you spend on other things, you employ people. You keep them working. You go to the store, right? You got extra money, you spend it on something else. That's what makes America great. That's what made it run for a long time. And then the government decided it needed to get bigger and bigger and bigger and control more of your life, and we've all just gone along with it. Now we've got things like our health care being controlled and taken over by the government. And I mean, again, it's like the lobster in the pot. You cook him slowly, he rather enjoys the warm water. Okay, we're going to take our break. And when we come back, Mark Scribner.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
The best barbershop in Tampa Bay has moved. Andrew's Master Barbershop is now located in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. They've got a beautiful new facility, but you'll still get the very best haircut from the very best hair cutters, and for a great price, too. Andrew's Master Barbershop is open Tuesday through Friday, 8:30 to 5, and Saturday, 8:30 to 2 p.m. Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Overcash Plaza, State Road 580 and Overcash Drive in Dunedin.
There's only one place on the radio where golfers like you can turn for the best tips, interviews, product reviews, local tournaments, and everything golf talk. The Golf Show Guys.
Hey, join The Golf Show Guys every Wednesday morning from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. It's not just funny, it's informative, it's celebrities, and it's a lot of applause. It's The Golf Show Guys, Wednesday mornings from 9 to 10 a.m. right here on the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Tom O'Brien is on the Tantalk Radio Network. Every Monday through Friday from 4 till 5 p.m., Tom takes to the airwaves as he breaks down the day's market action. Tom combines his technical knowledge of the markets with his years of trading experience to take your calls and questions every market day from 4 to 5 p.m. Whether you're new to trading or an active day trader, don't miss out on the Tom O'Brien Show live on the Tantalk Radio Network from 4 to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
We are back on a Monday morning, and we're delighted to have back a buddy of ours, Mark Scribner of the Great Competitive Enterprise Institute. And we've talked with Mark before about air traffic control, but we're talking again with him because there is a mood and a plan afoot to privatize the air traffic control system. Something that a lot of people scream holy hell about, but others say it's long overdue. Mark, welcome back to Freedom Works.
Great to be back, Paul.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. I've always been interested in this thing regarding air traffic controllers. You know, we've got a almost spotless record when it comes to commercial air flight in terms of safety. I mean, I cannot remember the last time, God forbid, we had a major plane crash in this country with a commercial flight. And so we look at the air traffic control system, just as the casual observer would, and say, well, everything's doing so well. Why would we want to change anything? But in reality, apparently, the air traffic control system in this country needs an upgrade, right?
Right. And, you know, this isn't to say that air traffic control as it's currently managed is unsafe. It's really what we're talking about is that over the years, really since the mid-aughts, they've been trying to bring air traffic control into the 21st century. And thanks to both congressional mismanagement and federal agency, regulatory agency mismanagement, there have been many delays, many cost overruns. And then as we look out across the rest of the developed world, we see some things that other countries have done where we see these commonalities and we see what has worked. And those are things that we are not currently doing here in the U.S. that we think we should be doing.
Yeah.
So that's what this effort is all about.
We always tend to think we lead the world in technology, and yet you're saying that perhaps we're behind other countries and technology for the air system?
Yeah, the United States was a leader in technology and in air traffic control technology until fairly recently. We have started falling behind, particularly when you look at a country like Canada, which is launching its own constellation of air traffic surveillance satellites, actually under a contract that was initially offered to the FAA here in the U.S. That they were forced to turn down because they conceded they couldn't commit to a financing proposal, and their internal procurement processes at the FAA wouldn't let them engage in that kind of business relationship. So it's only in recent years when we really started seeing this, and we've started seeing other countries move beyond where the U.S. currently sits.
Okay. Now, is this involved hat and glove with privatizing the air traffic controllers?
Well, so this is a unique proposal. So we're not talking about the proposal on the table isn't turning this over, selling off the assets to a for-profit private company. What it would do is Congress would charter a nonprofit user co-op. It's sort of structured along the lines of a utility. And that would then take over the responsibility from the aviation safety regulator, the FAA, and it would charge cost-based user fees to airlines. And then those fees would provide a direct revenue stream. So rather than being subject to the whims of appropriators in Congress, this air traffic control nonprofit would be able to behave more like a business. And importantly, and something that the FAA can't do right now, is that it would be able to enter capital markets and finance these improvements. So they could issue revenue bonds and make these modernizations much more rapidly than they could if they just relied on year-over-year federal funding.
We're talking with Mark Scribner of the Competitive Enterprise Institute in a bid to upgrade, update, and make better the air traffic control system. Mark, politics is always involved in these kinds of things. Are the Democrats generally opposed to this as opposed to maybe the Republicans in favor of it? Also, unions, you know, the air traffic controllers unions, they're feeling
yeah,
as well.
It's an interesting dynamic that we're seeing play out on Capitol Hill. You have the majority of Republicans in favor of this. You have the majority of Democrats opposed, but you do have, there are some Democratic co-sponsors to the bill in Congress. And if you look at former officials from the Obama and Clinton administration, there's near unanimous support for this proposal that's being spearheaded by Chairman Bill Schuster of the House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee with the support of House Republican leadership. With respect to unions, the Air Traffic Controllers Union, so the FAA controllers, is actually in favor of it, which is very surprising. They've never supported anything like this in the past, but I think they've seen what our neighbors to the north in Canada have been doing, and this is structured around the reforms that Canada did about 20 years ago. And they see how well things work up there, and they would like to see that here. Now, you do have some FAA employees, such as the middle managers. You have some technicians unions who are opposed, but the reason they're opposed is because one of the main advantages of modernizing is that we'd be able to consolidate facilities. And if you look at what happened in Canada, the number of controllers has stayed pretty much the same, but the other employees, so the technicians who are there helping maintain these aging facilities, and then the middle managers, those positions were slashed over time. So we saw dramatic cost savings on the labor side, not from cutting air traffic controllers, but from cutting these other positions. And I think that they fear that over time you would see the influence of career middle managers and these technicians reduced as we move to more automated modern systems that don't require as many people to maintain the infrastructure.
Now, the National Business Aviation Association is also opposed to it, as are the board of directors of some pretty large companies, including American Express and DuPont and Chase and Honeywell and Walmart. Why are they opposed?
So the National Business Aviation Association, NBAA, has historically opposed anything that would change the current aviation tax structure. And the reason is because under the status quo, these corporate jets pay about 0.6% of the tax revenue that supports the system, the air traffic control system, yet they account for over 10% of system use. So they're basically getting, for every dollar they put in, they're getting $20 worth of services, and that subsidy is conveniently paid for by those of us who fly commercial airlines through ticket and segment taxes that we see on all of our airfares. So they have an interest in preserving the status quo. But interestingly, Congress, in attempting to assuage these fears of business aviation and non-commercial general aviation, exempt all of them from fees. They also provide explicit access protection. So one thing that they've been the MBAA, what they've been claiming is that this is going to be a situation where the airlines are going to be able to limit the corporate jet access to airports, to airspace, but they included these very robust protections saying that won't be the case. And also, the airlines, the passenger carriers, have the same number of seats on the proposed board of directors as general aviation, non-commercial and commercial business jets. So the idea that this is dominated and this is some big plot by the airlines to soak the 0.01% who flies these business jets couldn't be further from the truth. But I think really what it comes down to is NBAA is a very large and powerful organization, and if this were to be removed, the air traffic control were to be removed outside of a federal agency, that it's no longer subject to annual appropriations, well, their lobbyists have a lot less to do on Capitol Hill than they do right now. So I think a lot of this is self-preservation. What is the point of a good chunk of MBAA's current operations if these lobbying is no longer going to be effective in swaying the policymakers' opinions on how to operate air traffic control? So I think a lot of it is just trying to protect their lobbying turf, given that they've received everything they asked for last year when they were complaining about a previous proposal.
We're talking with Mark Scribner of the Competitive Enterprise Institute about upgrading the air traffic control system. So where are we, Mark, in getting this upgrade actually approved? Where are we in the process, politically?
So last month we saw a short-term extension that'll bring us through March of next year for them to make another decision whether or not to pass the full FAA reauthorization or to pass another extension. It has been this proposal to spin off air traffic control from the FAA has passed out of the House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee and is currently awaiting scheduling on a floor vote for the full House. I think that the supporters are still counting votes. They may not want to put this on the floor if they don't think it will pass the House, but we expect them to vote on this soon. The bigger question is the Senate, which has its own FAA reauthorization proposal that is stalled due to a completely unrelated reason. So far the Senate has been allowing the House to lead on this, but the Senate has yet to really move in any serious direction towards air traffic control reform. So assuming this passes the House in the near term, the big question then is what is the Senate going to do?
Right, right. And, after that, let's assume that they get a bill to President Trump. I mentioned that a lot of these Fortune 500 companies are not, their execs are not so excited about it. What would Trump do, in your opinion? Would he sign it?
It's actually, the White House has expressed support for this proposal, and Secretary Chao has been a vocal proponent. It's actually interesting, though. Those companies that are represented by MBAA, those are their flight departments. But those companies are also members of the Business Roundtable, which has been one of the chief supporters of this. So, the CEOs of these companies may have gone on the record publicly in favor of this proposal, but they have their flight departments, the parts of their companies that manage their corporate jet fleets, that may be opposed to this because they receive these subsidies. So you have kind of an interesting situation where you have a major Fortune 500 company maybe publicly taking a position in favor of this, but privately lobbying behind the scenes against it, or at least an entity within that company is privately mm-hmm. lobbying against it. So there's kind of a split personality when it comes to some of these major multinationals who are large enough and rich enough to afford a fleet of corporate jets.
And, Congress has taken a lot of hits for not getting anything done this year. And I'm wondering, they got the health care bill to worry about. They got immigration to worry about. They got the tax plan to worry about. Do you honestly think that they're going to get this thing through right now? I mean, it sounds to me like this is never going to get through this year.
Amazingly, this is as far as major reform of air traffic control has ever come. This idea really dates back to the Reagan administration.
Yeah, I was thinking about that.
And a similar version, not quite as good, was tried by the Clinton administration. And then the George W. Bush administration also floated a proposal. And all of those basically went nowhere in Congress. So this is actually the first time we've seen a bill come out of favorably out of the House Transportation Committee, and then get this far in terms of earning the support of House leadership and being basically on the docket for a floor vote. That's never, we don't have the vote yet, but it's never come this far. But you're absolutely right. This is a heavy lift. But I am encouraged that we've gotten further than we've ever gotten before, and I think supporters recognize how critical it is to move forward now in modernizing our air traffic control, because if we don't, that just means we're going to be stuck with more delays and many more billions of dollars in cost overruns that we could otherwise avoid.
And again, to the naive layman going, well, what's this all about? You say upgrade. What are you talking about? I mean, we get the plane up, we get the plane down. Is this going to be like just an upgrade to a large extent, a consolidation of people, but also going into the 21st century, quite frankly, with satellites as opposed to just computers, or what?
Well, yeah, I mean, really, it's, you know, there's a number of things, but think of it as transitioning from our current ground-based radar system to a modern GPS-style satellite surveillance system. Uh-huh. Those are the biggest updates, and that allows planes to fly closer together because the tracking is much more precise, and it would also allow them to fly straighter routes. So that means less time in the sky and fewer delays for airline travelers and everyone who uses the system.
Well, keep up the good fight on it, Mark. It sounds like it's something we need to do, and I want to thank you so very much for being with us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Paul. Great to be back.
All right. Mark Scribner. Always a good interview from Mark Scribner. All right, we're going to take our break, and when we come back, Jimmy Carter, of all people, is backing Donald Trump against the media.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
The best barbershop in Tampa Bay has moved. Andrew's Master Barbershop is now located in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. They've got a beautiful new facility, but you'll still get the very best haircut from the very best hair cutters, and for a great price, too. Andrew's Master Barbershop is open Tuesday through Friday, 8:30 to 5, and Saturday, 8:30 to 2 p.m. Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Overcash Plaza, State Road 580 and Overcash Drive in Dunedin.
Let's go bowling!
Let's go bowling, heard on the Tantalk Radio Network every Wednesday, 11 a.m. to 12 Eastern Time, sponsored by 12 Strike and Innovative Ball Spinner. If you bowl, if you haven't bowled in a while, or if you never bowled, why don't you be one of 65 million people have bowled last year? Listen to the tip of the week, bowling stars, old and new. Let's go bowling show, gobowlingshow.com.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, we're back on Freedom Works. We thank you so very much for being with us on this Monday morning. Boy, we live in interesting. You ever heard the toast, "May you live in interesting times"? Boy, we do seem to be living in interesting, maybe dangerous times too, right? With North Korea and Iran, everything going on around us. And in the meantime, Red China, you know, they've been around as sort of a veiled threat to our system of government and freedom for a long time. And now U.S. and other Western scientists are alarmed to some extent. China is quickening and spending a lot of money on what's called quantum communications and computing. These are revolutionary technologies that could give a huge military and commercial advantage to the nation that's able to conquer them. And the concern echoes to some extent, compares to the shock we in the West felt when Russia was able to get a satellite up in the sky before we did. There was something called Sputnik. It came in 1957. And a guy by the name of Yuri Gagarin, he was the first astronaut to get up there. And it made us, this was during the Eisenhower administration, it made us kind of slap ourselves side of the head, you know? You kind of get fat and comfy. And maybe that's what's happening here. In recent months, China has utilized a quantum satellite to transmit ultra-secure data, inaugurated a 1,200-mile quantum link between Shanghai and Beijing, and announced a $10 billion quantum computing center. So here we go, you know, technology, and we always think we're on the cutting edge of technology. And all these other countries are just picking up what we have figured out, right? Not so. Now, here is a physicist from the and senior manager at the Institute for Quantum Computing in Ontario, Canada. All of this doesn't mean necessarily that China's scientists are better, he said. It's just that when they say we need $1 billion to do this, that, and the other thing, bam, they get the money. Of course, the government there is funding all of this, right? It's just something to think about. You know, and I thought I'd bring it up in light of the fact that we're talking about how our technology in air traffic control is a little, you know, we're using radar when everybody driving a car these days is using the GPS and the satellite systems. Okay. Well, good old Maxine Waters. We're going to talk a little bit about some of the things that poor Donald Trump is going through. Democratic Congressman Maxine Waters, who hates Donald Trump, recently told a New York audience, quote, she'll take out the president. She's going to take him out. She didn't exactly. She said, I'm going to take him out tonight. I'll take Trump out tonight. That's what she said. She was at this New York shindig of some sort. Oh, the Ali Forney Center. Muhammad Ali, I guess. Forney Center in New York. And she said, wow, what a moving evening this is. I'm sitting here listening, watching, absorbing, thinking about Ali, even though I never met him. And with this kind of inspiration, I will go and take Trump out tonight. Now, what in the heck? Why would she say that, right? Well, she's got that kind of an audience. The crowd, of course, cheered. Now, she has suggested several times recently that Donald Trump should be impeached. Most recently, she said this over his argument that NFL players should stop taking a knee during a football game and the national anthem. So you know where she's coming from. In the meantime, Jimmy Carter. Yeah, good old Jimmy is still around. You know, they had all of the past presidents, all five of them together for this event the other day. He's 93 years old now. 93. He's doing pretty well. You know, it's eating peanuts. That's what has kept him going. He ate a lot of peanuts. You know, peanut butter is very good for you. It really is. If you got to eat anything, get a jar of peanut butter. I guess even the cracker's not good for you. So you just eat the peanut butter right out of the jar with a teaspoon. That'll be good. Anyway, he's surprisingly siding, Jimmy Carter is, with Donald Trump. He told the New York Times that the media has been too hostile on the Donald. He said, quote, I think the media have been harder on Trump than any other president, certainly that I've known about. And you know who he said it to? The liberal Maureen Dowd, the columnist for the New York Times that can't stand Donald Trump. Carter added that he thought the media, quote, feel free to claim that Trump is mentally deranged and everything else without hesitation, unquote. He also pushed back on accusations of Russian collusion in the election. Quote, I don't think there's any evidence that what the Russians did changed enough votes or any votes, he said. And by the way, he said he and his wife voted for Bernie in the primary, in the Democratic primary. Carter also said he does not believe the president's America First strategy is out of step. He said, well, he, meaning Trump, he might be escalating it, America First, but I think that precedes Trump regarding international relations. And that America First is out of step with the rest of the world. He says the United States has been the dominant character in the whole world, and now we're not anymore, and we're not going to be. Russia's coming back, and India and China are coming forward. Now, here's why, in a way, I think that Jimmy Carter is sort of playing up to Donald. Carter said he's willing to go to North Korea on a diplomatic effort. I think he wants to go to North Korea very badly, and I think he's trying to sugarcoat things and say nice things about Donald Trump so he'll be given that consideration. He considers himself a world diplomat. He really does. And for those of us that are old enough to remember when he was president, he brought the head of Egypt, the president of Egypt at the time, Anwar Sadat, and the prime minister of Israel at the time, Menachem Begin, together for a peace conference, and he got them to shake hands. You know, these were two countries that could not stand each other for thousands of years, and he was trying desperately to get them to agree to a peace agreement, and he got the Nobel Prize for it, for his efforts. So he always has considered himself the kind of guy that could go into a situation like that and be successful. So I think, I may be wrong. How do you know what somebody's really thinking? But I think he's trying to make nice with Donald Trump because he wants to go to North Korea and be an ambassador. So we'll see about that. Now, speaking of North Korea, the Air Force is getting ready to place its fleet of nuclear B-52 planes on a 24-hour alert. On a 24-hour alert for the first time since 1991. All of this amid escalating tension with North Korea. Officials are saying, or let's say this, defense officials denied the bombers were ordered to go on 24-hour alert, but General David Goldfein told Defense One it could occur. He said, this is yet one more step in ensuring that we're prepared. So they're prepping for it. You know, we forget about what's going on with North Korea. I wonder if Kim Jong-un has this, he's got to have a place where he can go and hide. Because there is talk now, and I'm reading more about it, about just taking that guy out. You know, don't just take him out. You know, if we got rid of him and maybe a couple of the big wigs around him, it might be the way to do it. Rather, I mean, we can't bomb the country. We can't. So what do? I think you got to take out just a few individuals. Kind of like Osama bin Laden, you know? What do you think, Ed? Should we take him out? How about a drone over there? Maybe we could send a drone saying that it's a, you know, it's a package of cookies for him.
I don't think you have to do that. I said all along what he should do is Donald Trump should lay out a map, mm-hmm. North Korea, and then a fallout zone, whatever it is, a 45, 50-mile radius or 100-mile radius, and tell everybody in that radius to get out. And then mail it to him. Or when he used to drop leaflets over the country.
Yes.
And by the way, Jimmy Carter couldn't handle the Iranians anyway. I mean,
yeah,
he was in everybody else's business but our own.
Yeah.
That's
Jimmy Carter is.
But as you said, if he wants to be a diplomat,
I think he wants to try. He's making nice with Donald Trump. Now, why would he do that?
I mean, I don't know how you deal with that little thing over there.
I don't either.
I don't think he...
We sent a basketball player over there, and that didn't do much good.
Well, he's from a different planet anyway, so... I mean, I don't know what you can really deal with other than send him, you know, candy and flowers or whatever, something to eat.
Well, do you think we should make nice with Kim Jong-un? In other words, just say, look, let's let bygones be bygones. You've been acting like an idiot, and we're going to forget it, so let's make nice now.
He's got a plan. He's got a plan. He's sticking to it. He wants to be a superpower or whatever, and... He's going to stick to it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No matter what it costs his own people.
Yeah, well, he doesn't care about his own. Boy, no, the more you read about him and his lavish lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
There was a woman, by the way, that escaped North Korea, and she's making the rounds. I don't know if she wrote a book. She's making the rounds and talking about what life was like in North Korea for everybody and how they had to, in schools and in all of these official... you know, they always have these official things going on. they have to pretty much adore the guy. They have to say certain things, say it in a certain way. He's actually, you just wonder what goes on inside the heads of those people that live there. I guess to some extent, they get, it turns into a kind of a cult following for some of them. They actually lose their perspective of the world with that guy. And, but this woman told of the horrors. She lost many members of her family that were killed, and tortured. And she was able to get out of the country. I'm not sure exactly how she was able to engineer that. But she's very, she speaks very well, speaks great English. And obviously very educated. Very, very, very interesting story on her. Okay, let us take our final break. And when we come back, among other things, there is a brand new, hot off the press, top 10 best airports for passengers, and we're going to tell you who they are.
Start spreading the news. I'm leaving today. I want to be a part of it.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
The best barbershop in Tampa Bay has moved. Andrew's Master Barbershop is now located in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. They've got a beautiful new facility, but you'll still get the very best haircut from the very best hair cutters, and for a great price, too. Andrew's Master Barbershop is open Tuesday through Friday, 8:30 to 5, and Saturday, 8:30 to 2 p.m. Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Overcash Plaza, State Road 580 and Overcash Drive in Dunedin.
Are you looking for some great restaurants? For some great wines? Where are the great chefs? Listen to Dine Out Radio Herd every Wednesday on the Tantalk Radio Network. 12 to 1 p.m., we'll tell you where all the great events are. We'll have Food and Wine Magazine and Bon Appetit Magazine. We'll have their editors and writers on each month. And maybe we'll throw in a couple surprises. Check out the website, diningoutradio.com.
My bridge is all.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, we're back for the final segment. Thank you very much, really, for being with us. We really appreciate that. We've been doing this show now for about 15 years. I don't know how we retain our youth, Ed, but we do. Rachel Maddow does a show on MSNBC, and she is getting very good ratings, by the way. In fact, I've read where her show might be the most watched cable news show during the week. I'm not absolutely positive. Fox News tends to dominate everything. But she does her show between 9 to 10 a.m. on MSNBC Eastern Time. And she has come up with a conspiracy theory that even the Huffington Post said is nonsense. And it has to do with the killing of those Green Beret troops in Niger. So, on Thursday evening last week, she opened with a 25-minute diatribe attempting to connect the ambush of those four American soldiers in Niger to the latest version of Trump's proposed travel ban. Now, how do you connect a travel ban to an attack in Niger? Well, one of the countries that has been banned in this proposed travel ban is Chad, right? Maddow essentially said that the inclusion of Chad, which recently pulled its troops out of Niger in the revised travel ban, resulted in extremists attacking the Americans because of the travel ban. I don't think so. The Huffington Post, which, by the way, is so anti-Trump, it refuses to even cover him in their political section when he was running his presidential campaign. They ignored him to their discredit. Published a story headline, "What the hell was this Rachel Maddow segment?" So they even wondered what she was talking about. In the Huffington Post, Laura Say said, any expert would have said Maddow's conspiracy theory was crazy. And the pullout of Chadian troops is not necessarily related to the travel ban. So anyway, Rachel Maddow is known to come up with these kind of conspiratorial. She reminds me of that FedEx commercial where the two women in a bookstore are sitting there and the FedEx guy comes in and they sell these kind of conspiracy books. And she reminds me a little bit of the woman on the left in that commercial, if you remember the commercial. So anyway, now, what is going on or not going on, I would like to know, on this Russian uranium deal. Have you noticed that the press will not talk about it? We talked about this Friday. Now, Donald Trump is blasting the fake media. And he blasted them last week for ignoring new details. They talk about Russia's involvement. Well, they purchased 20% of our uranium, and the press doesn't want to talk about that one. That's a heck of a lot more important and more dangerous than what they're talking about. And yet you'll not see anything about it, none, in the mainstream media. And it's just, I think they're scared stiff of the story because it goes back to when former President Bill Clinton was making $500,000 for one speech in Russia. All of that tied in with the foundation that Hillary and he ran and the purchase of that uranium by the Russians. How did they even get the okay to get it purchased, you know? All of that ties in. Okay, before we get to our top 10, I'm going to wake up, Ed, because we had a heartbreaking game here, and we always talk about during football season when the Bucs are playing. And they went up to Buffalo, Ed, and it was actually a very exciting game. But it ended up, unfortunately, Tampa Bay on the wrong side of a score. Did you think Buffalo was going to be able to beat the Buccaneers? I mean, they seem like they started out well this year, and now they're kind of sliding a little bit.
Not so sure they were going to beat the Bucs. I was sure the Bucs were going to beat themselves.
Oh, you were so, before the game. Yeah. You've lost faith in them.
I've changed my prediction.
You have?
I said they were going to win 10 games this year.
Now you're done.
I'm going to say 7 or less.
What do you attribute the problem to?
The defense is horrible. I mean, it's just horrible. They've had some injuries, and I'm not sure for the defensive scheme they're running, they have the horses to run the scheme.
Really?
Yeah. I'm seeing the same tendencies I saw about 2.5 years ago when Lovie Smith's last year.
Okay.
And I brought the question to him. I said, you know, do you have the horses to run the scheme? And if you don't, would you consider? And he stopped me right off and he goes, we're not changing a thing.
Who said that to you?
Lovie Smith, back a couple of years ago.
He was rather stubborn, wasn't he? I said,
that's when confidence becomes arrogance.
Yeah.
And to think that you have to adapt. There were things, and they may have to adapt and may have to change some things. I'm not sure that this is the scheme they need to run. I don't believe they have the personnel for it.
Who is the head defense coach for the Bucs?
That's Mike Smith. He was the old Atlanta Falcons head coach.
Yeah.
Before he got fired.
So, do you think that there needs to be consideration for somebody else, or does he have to?
I don't think you can do it right now. There will be next year if it doesn't change.
Yeah.
There will be next year.
Okay. How do you think, real quickly, Jameis Winston, the quarterback for the Bucs, is coming along?
I think he did all right, but he keeps missing the long ball. He's got to get that figured out.
I see.
He's got to.
Okay. Thank you. All right, it is time for a very good top 10. These are the best airports for passengers in North America. And it just came out. It's an organization called sleepinginairports.net. I love that.
That's what you really want to do.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you got time on your hands, right? Where, what airport would you want best want to sleep in? Well, we got it for you. Mm-hmm. All right, in North America. Here we go. Number 10. Phoenix. Their Sky Harbor International Airport, thanks to features like water bottle refill stations, the in-house fitness trail, a very friendly staff, and good dining and shopping options. Mm-hmm. All right, number 9. The San Francisco International Airport. Clean terminals, great customer service, efficient airport processes. That's what you need to go to San Francisco for, right? Number 8. Indianapolis International Airport. Great example of a simple terminal that keeps travelers happy by doing a good job providing the basics. No extra bells and whistles, but everything, it's clean, organized, and efficient. Number 7. Anchorage. Ever been to Anchorage yet?
No.
Anchorage Ted Stevens Airport. Smaller and a little out of the way, this lesser-known gem delights travelers. Loads of armrest-free seats. Practically made for sleeping. Let's go there to sleep. Number 6. DFW, Dallas-Fort Worth International. Perhaps the most noteworthy thing about this airport, goes out of the way to accommodate airport sleepers. Should you find yourself stranded overnight? One traveler suggests picking up a courtesy phone, locating the nearest cot and blanket for free. Ah, number 5. Detroit Metro Wayne County Airport. Travelers say the terminal's easy to navigate, straightforward gate-to-gate transfers, moving sidewalks and trams to cover long distances. Number 4. Minneapolis, St. Paul Airport. Big points for a place to get some shut-eye. An airport that sees its fair share of winter storms. It's taken a number of steps to ensure anyone who needs to spend the night can comfortably do so. Number 3. It's our own airport, Tampa. Tampa International Airport is number 3. Year after year, travelers are delighted at how easy it is to navigate Tampa Airport. The hub-and-spoke design of the terminals and the plethora of signs make it convenient and easy to get from parking to your gate. It's not just the airport layout. They also say how friendly and helpful the staff are.
And boy, is that going to change. You see all the upgrades they're doing? Boy, yep. Oh, wow. It's getting a complete makeover.
Do you like it?
I don't know. I don't know what it's going to look like.
Yeah.
I mean, there's going to be all new parking and new shuttles and stuff like that.
Well, I hope it'll be good, but they always rank high. Number 2. Portland International Airport. Travelers love how local Portland's airport feels. Pop-up market, live music, local sourced shopping, affordable restaurants. Just an all-around good experience. And finally, the number 1, best airport.
I'm going to say Denver.
That's a good guess. It ain't. Yeah. It's Vancouver.
Yeah.
The only one from Canada. But it's number 1. Canada's Vancouver International, becoming the uncontested best airport. Year after year, they're voted number 1. Cleanliness, friendliness, overall decor, West Coast feel, complete with Aboriginal art, panoramic views, and a saltwater aquarium. All right. Thanks for being with us. We'll be back Wednesday. And remember, freedom works.
So baby, please proceed to give the love I need. I want your loving. Yes, indeed.
WTAN. Water.
FM 106.1.
WDCF, Dade City, Tampa Bay. WZHR, Zephyr Hills.
FM 104.3.
Listen.
About Niger. Trump pushes his tax plan. I'm Evan Haining. Disputes about the tone of President Trump's